Section 8 of Robinson Crusoe in Words of One Syllable. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, visit LibriVox.org. Robinson Crusoe in Words of One Syllable by Mary Godolphin. Section 8. One day, as we stood on the top of the hill at the east side of the isle, I saw him fix his eyes on the mainland, and stand for a long time to gaze at it, then jump and sing, and call out to me. "What do you see?" said I. "Oh, joy," said he, with a fierce glee in his eyes. "Oh, glad, there see my land." Why did he strain his eyes to stare at this land, as if he had a wish to be there? It put fears in my mind, which made me feel far less at my ease with him. Thought I, if he should go back to his home, he will think no more of what I have taught him, and done for him. He will be sure to tell the rest of his tribe all my ways, and come back with, it may be, scores of them, and kill me, and then dance round me, as they did round the men, the last time they came on my isle. But these were all false fears, though they found a place in my mind a long while, and I was not so kind to him now as I had been. From this time I made it a rule, day by day, to find out if there were grounds for my fears or not. I said, "Do you not wish to be once more in your own land?" "Yes, I be much, oh, glad to be at my own land." "What would you do there? Would you turn wild and be as you were?" "No, no, I would tell them to be good, tell them eat bread, corn, milk, no, eat man more." "Why, they would kill you." "No, no, they no kill, they love learn." He then told me that some white men, who had come on their shores in a boat, had taught them a great deal. "Then will you go back to your land with me?" He said he would not swim so far. So I told him he should help me to build a boat to go in. Then he said, "If you go, I go." "I go? Why, they would eat me." "No, me make them much love you." Then he told me as well as he could how kind they had been to some white men. I brought out the large boat to hear what he thought of it, but he said it was too small. We then went to look at the old ship's boat, which, as it had been in the sun for years, was not at all in a sound state. The poor man made sure that it would do, but how were we to know this? I told him we should build a boat as large as that, and that he should go home in it. He spoke not a word, but was grave and sad. "What ails you?" said I. "Why, you grieve mad with your man." "What do you mean? I am not cross with you." "No cross? No cross with me? Why, send your man home to his own land, then." "Did you not tell me you would like to go back?" "Yes, yes, we both there. No wish self there, if you not there. And what should I do there?" "You do great deal much good. You teach wild men be good men. You tell them know God, pray God, and lead new life." We soon set to work to make a boat that would take us both. The first thing was to look out for some large trees that grew near the shore, so that we could launch our boat when it was made. My slave's plan was to burn the wood to make it in the right shape, but as mine was to hew it, I set him to work with my tools, and in 2 months' time we had made a good, strong boat. But it took a long while to get her down to the shore. Friday had the whole charge of her, and, large as she was, he made her move with ease, and said he thought she go there well, though great blow wind. he did not know that I meant to make a mast and sail. I cut down a young fir tree for the mast, and then I set to work at the sail. It made me laugh to see my man stand and stare when he came to watch me sail the boat. But he soon gave a jump, a laugh, and a clap of the hands when he saw the sail jibe and fall, first on this side, then on that. The next thing to do was to stow our boat up in the creek, where we dug a small dock, and when the tide was low we made a dam to keep out the sea. The time of year had now come for us to set sail, so we got out all our stores to put them in the boat. One day I sent Friday to the shore to get a sort of herb that grew there. I soon heard him cry out to me, "Oh, grief! Oh, bad! Oh, bad! Oh, out there, boats! One, two, three!" "Keep a stout heart," said I, to cheer him. The poor man shook with fear, for he thought that the men who brought him here had now come back to kill him. "Can you fight?" said I. "Me shoot, but me saw three boats. One, two, three." "Have no fear. Those that we do not kill will be sure to take fright at the sound of our guns. Now, will you stand by me and do just as you are bid? Me die when you bid die." I gave him a good draught of rum, and when he had drunk this, he took up an axe and two guns, each of which had a charge of swan shot. I took two guns as well, and put large shot in them, and then hung my great sword by my side. From the top of the hill, I saw with the help of my glass that the boats had each brought 8 men and 1 slave. They had come on shore near the creek, where a grove of young trees grew close down to the sea. They had with them 3 slaves, bound hand and foot, and you who read this may guess what they were brought here for. I felt that I must try and save them from so hard a fate, and that to do this I should have to put some of their foes to death. So we set forth on our way. I gave Friday strict charge to keep close to me, and not to fire till I told him to do so. We went full a mile out of our way, that we might get round to the wood to bide there, but we had not gone far when my old qualms came back to me, and I thought, "Is it for me to dip my hands in man's blood? Why should I kill those who have done me no harm, and mean not to hurt me? Nay, who do not so much as know that they are in the wrong when they hold these feasts? Are not their ways a sign that God has left them, with the rest of their tribe, to their own dull hearts? God did not call me to be a judge for him. He who said, 'Thou shalt not kill,' said it for me as well as the rest of the world." A throng of thoughts like these would rush on my mind, as if to warn me to pause, till I felt sure that there was no more to call me to the work than I then knew of. I took my stand in the wood to watch the men at their feast, and then crept on with Friday close at my heels. Thus we went till we came to the skirts of the wood. Then I said to Friday, "Go up to the top of that tree, and bring me word if you can see the men." He went, and quick as thought, came back to say that they were all round the fire, and that the man who was bound on the sand would be the next they would kill. But when he told me that it was a white man, one of my own race, I felt the blood boil in my veins. Two of the gang had gone to loose the white man from his bonds, so now was the time to fire. At the sound of our guns, we saw all the men jump up from the ground where they sat. It must have been the first gun that they had heard in their lives. They knew not which way to look. I now threw down my piece and took up a small gun. Friday did the same, and I gave him the word to fire. The men ran right and left with yells and screams. I now made a rush out of the wood that they might see me, with my man Friday at my heels, of course. We gave a loud shout and ran up to the white man as fast as we could. There he lay on the hot sand. I cut the flag, or rush, by which he was bound, but he was too weak to stand or speak, so I gave him some rum. He let me know, by all the signs that he could think of, how much he stood in my debt for all that I had done for him. I said, "We will talk of that by and by, but now we must do what we can to save our lives." Friday, who was free to go where he chose, flew here and there, and put all the men to the rout. They fled in full haste to their boats, and were soon out at sea, and so we got rid of our foes at last. The man whom we had found on the sand told us that his name was Carl, and that he came from Spain. But there was one more man to claim our care, for the black men had left a small boat on the sand, and in this I saw a poor wretch who lay half dead. He could not so much as look up, so tight was he bound, neck and heels. When I cut the bonds from him, he gave a deep groan, for he thought that all this was but to lead him out to die. Friday then came up, and I bade him speak to the old man in his own tongue, and tell him that he was free. This good news gave him strength, and he sat up in the boat. But when Friday came to hear him talk, and to look him in the face, it brought the tears to my eyes to see him kiss and hug the poor old man, and dance round him with joy, then weep, wring his hands, and beat his own face and head, and then laugh once more, sing, and leap. For a long time he could not speak to me, so as to let me know what all this meant. But at length he told me that he was the son of this poor old man, and that his name was Jaff. End of Section 8, read by Dennis Sayers in Modesto, California for LibriVox, Spring 2007.